Welcome to Behind the Badge, BATC con podcast. Today I've got USPCA, which is the United States Police Canine Association. I have Don Slavik, which is the Executive Director, Dave Ferland, and Steve White. Gentlemen, go ahead and introduce yourself. Don, if you want to start.
Sure, Mike. My name is Don Slavik, as he said, Executive Director of the United States Police Canine Association. Law enforcement history is retired from the St. Paul Police Department, where I was a canine handler and then trainer for 22 years. Went to ATF and trained dogs for 8 years, and then the State Department for 2 years, overseeing all of the dogs in Iraq. Tied to the State Department, and then I got the job of the executive director.
Steve?
My name's Steve White. I've retired from the Seattle Police Department in October of 2021 after a 46-year law enforcement career of being a cop of one flavor or another, beginning with military police canine in 1975. Most of my time in law enforcement has been in canine, and upon retiring, I still have the passion for it, and I'm lucky I get to work with the United States Police Canine Association's Best Practices Working Group.
Awesome. And then on the podcast here, it says Dr. David Lou Ferland.
Yes, it's an academic doctorate. I'm not a medical doctor, but hello, Mike. Thank you for inviting me to this, and welcome to your listeners. My name is David. My nickname is Lou, and my last name is Ferland, and I am a retired police chief over here in New Hampshire. I have 40 years in the canine police canine world, starting off as a handler, going to a state trainer, eventually moving on to a national trainer, national judge with the USPCA. I retired quite a ways back. I now teach college courses. I help police departments with their police canine units. I help individual cases as a subject matter expert and a federally admitted court testimony type of person. And I belong to the United States Police Canine Association's Best Practices Group. Steve's part of that. Don obviously is part of that, where we meet once a week and discuss specific canine things that are going on in the United States, sometimes in the world, to see how we might be able to help move the industry. The canine industry in a positive direction, tackle problems that we have now, and try to get 3, 5, 10 years ahead of that to figure out where we need to go to continue to improve upon our canine services and what that looks like today to get there tomorrow.
That's very cool. I don't know if you guys were hearing. I saw you guys kind of looking around a little bit as one of my dogs in the background kind of barking. I think she's dreaming right now, so I had to put it on mute and tell her to knock it off. And so my experience with police canine is I was a certified decoy. I got to get bit, tracked, everything else, which was fun. I really enjoyed that. Started a canine program in Tularosa when I was the chief there. I had two dogs that were donated to me from some folks that were in Texas. I had a large litter of Belgian Malinois, and so I went over. One of the guys that worked for me, he was the second in command. He was actually a certified canine instructor, so a trainer. So we went and we got the dogs at 11 weeks old, started working them up just for dope work. We were doing the big three because marijuana was becoming legalized in New Mexico, and we saw the writing on the wall and weren't going to do that. So we started training them for that, and then the village of Tularosa said, no, it's too dangerous. We don't want the liability because dogs bite. And I was like, well, dogs bite as a pack mentality kind of thing. They're going to protect their handler. They're not trained to bite. I'm not telling them to bite, but if somebody attacks me, then they're going to try to protect me. But they didn't want to hear that. But that's beside the point. We got through all that kind of stuff and still have the dogs and still get to play with them and have fun and everything else. So, let's talk about the stuff that USPCA does, the canine group. You guys, I know you do the executive side of things and looking towards the future and that kind of stuff. What about agencies that you're working with and what you do for the different agencies, small agencies, large agencies, that kind of stuff?
Sure. We have, we do certifications, as do most of the large associations. We do 14 different types of certifications. We have over 3,000 members. And what we have is somewhat unique in the industry right now, is that it's not only about the training, the physical training of the dog and the handler. We are sharply breaking into the area where it's the information that the handler needs to have before they deploy, how they deploy. Mm-hmm. Are they deploying to policy? Are they deploying to the laws of the state and the country that they need to be thinking about? So we're really doing a lot of educational type stuff. Unfortunately, for many police departments, especially the smaller ones, there's a financial crisis in the sense where departments now are challenged more because they have people that they can't build their staff. And so dog guys have to work a lot. They don't get the time off. Training becomes an issue. So we're trying to fund the smaller groups, the smaller agencies, not fund them in a sense, but bring the training to them and so that they don't have the expense of going away, having to go away. They can get there right in the area. And so and that's a big thing. And the overall best practices group is what the segue is into all of this. This is where we're finding out all the information about what's happening in the United States, the good, the bad, and with the informational and everything else. So, it's an everyday challenge to try to make sure that the information that our handlers, trainers, and we also we did the year of the supervisor last year, where we had 5 videos that we put out about supervisors. So we're trying to hit all the places where we're supposed to be at and making sure that everybody has the knowledge.
Okay. Yeah. Very cool. Did you, somebody else have something or no? Pretty much hit it all on the head, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. So if an agency is looking to do the canine program, say an agency like Tularosa, where I was, 7-man department, not real big, 3,000, population, 2.8 square miles of jurisdiction. Where would they go? Who would they talk to, and what kind of help could they get?
When the other guys want to tackle that,
I'll jump in. Just if we can hook back to your story, Mike, of when you attempted to get a canine unit started.
Yes, sir.
In your city. I mean, here you have an example of what you just described. Here's a hurdle that you faced because of a preconceived notion of what the dog was about. So one of the things that organizations like the USPCA can provide is they can help give you a reality check about what it takes to get the unit started, what it takes to maintain it and get things going, and help you assess, I don't know if you're familiar with the term SWOT analysis, SWOT, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats.
Yes, sir.
But they can help you through the process of their certification model, their distributed training all around the country with member regions providing distributed training. You can wind up having a way that you can show that you could sustain this. You can make a decision about whether you want to have, if you're going to have a detector dog, is it just a pointy-eared dog, such as the ones that you happen to be gifted? Or are you going to have an easier sell getting that across to a city council if it's a floppy-eared dog? Because people have preconceived notions about this. So we help not only bring the logical arguments, but we also help with the structure of what it takes to get the job done. And not just getting it started, but the actual job of doing the work. Our focus is everything about raising the existing level. Wherever you're at, if you're just beginning and you're just kind of getting your feet wet in canine, we want to help you get up to that journey level, that level where you can be truly counted on to be proficient at your work. And if you're at the top, well, then you know what? Not only are you going to take your work to the next level, but you're going to be one of those people that helps distribute knowledge.
Right.
And that's kind of the USPCA's real strength, is this large body of institutional knowledge that we're trying to harness and delivered to the public, and not just to our members, but, you know, the USPCA's YouTube channel is open access to anybody. You know, full transparency. See everything that we talk about.
Okay. That's USPCA K9? Is that how you look for the YouTube channel?
I believe so, Don. Is that right?
It is USPCA K9, but some of our regions also have their stuff on there also, but it is the USPCA.
Okay. When I put this all together, I'll put that link in here so people can just click on it if they're watching the YouTube for the delivery of this.
Well, there's 64 videos on there right now. So
wow, okay. Very cool.
USPCA has been around since the early 70s. It's the nation's oldest and largest police dog group. They have tremendous mentors on board. The organization you're talking about, new handlers, new programs, they can help with identifying exactly what is the goal of the department with this dog, you know, to bring some sort of synchronicity here to what's the chief expect, what's the community expect, what's the handler want to have, you know, to first get that everybody on the same page, and then to pair up the handler perhaps with mentorship that might be in their area, training that might be in the area, certification that might be in the area. Maybe help them prepare a reasonable budget for those first 3 years. So everybody's kind of aware of what's going on. We just presented at the IACP conference here in Boston. We did a fundraising for small agencies, how small agencies can raise the money for the 3 to 5 year startup for that police dog team without having to go into all the federal grant hassles and all those different levels. This is how to grassroots and how to get significant money on board in a police dog unit, especially when it's starting off, the importance of a nonprofit foundation, perhaps getting created or at least piggybacking on to another one and having the canine as a subcommittee to an existing nonprofit. Those type of things we just went over. And that is now a paper that's on the a research paper that's on the USPCA site that anybody can look at and see exactly what we presented at that. These are some of the ideas, some of the brainstorming efforts of the USPCA that is getting pushed out to the industry for the handlers to use, no matter what size agency they might be representing.
Oh, very cool. Now, one of the fortunate things that I had here was backing from the New Mexico State Police and their canine unit. They came down, they spoke with the council as well, and told them we're going to, you know, donate our time to help train the dogs, to help certify the dogs. And then they'll continue training with us. You know, handlers and dogs will continue training with us throughout their career. And that would be no money out of pocket, which they explained to them. It's very expensive to have a trained certified dog and then also get your handler certified. But they were, you know, that cost was going to go away because they're going to do it for us, because they're all, you know, they had several trainers and everything else, and they still denied us. But knowing that that opportunity is out there for other agencies based off of USPCA K9 is awesome. I met Don in Las Vegas at the K9 show out there. I don't know, Steve, I don't know if you were there or not, if I met you, because I didn't have your card. I got Don's card. That's why I was like, oh, I got to call Don, get him on this podcast. So. And he brought you all with him. That's very cool. But,
Mike, can you think of better tools that a police chief would want to bring on board their department? You know, we often underscore, we go automatically to the, you know, the dog, the training and the certification, and we forget why police departments would want to have this critical tool in this day and age. It is so versatile. It is, you know, it's great for officer wellness. It's great for officer safety. It's a wonderful tool for public safety. It helps with officer retention. The police chief has something to talk about at the Rotary Club meetings and to showcase, you know, something to bring to all these community outreach programs. It is just such a, and it's transportable. It's cheap, relatively cheap, significantly cheaper than an extra person. And so, you know, the benefits of having these well-trained dogs is amazing. And I just wanted to make sure before we move on, I wanted to kind of throw in why we have dogs to begin with, because they serve so many purposes in an agency, no matter if you're the size of a NYPD or if you're the size of a 3, 4, 5 person department.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
they're the best mobile detection tool we have.
Yeah.
Nothing compares. I mean, I had the good fortune years ago to be involved in a DARPA symposium where they're trying to make an artificial mind detection, a robot.
Oh.
And so I'm in a room with all these PhD scientists from around the world, but my dog was the gold standard against which they compared their work. And they just said, and they said, we're nowhere near. And this was in 1999, and they said, we're maybe 15 years away. Now look at this. We're more than 25 years from then, and they still haven't got it.
Yeah.
Because nothing in the inventory can do what the dog can do.
Yeah.
There isn't a single tool in the law enforcement inventory that can go from the local Stop and Rob, track through the city, 5 or 6, 7 blocks, half a mile, maybe more, and then find the suspect hiding under some innocent family's back deck.
Right.
Nothing else can do that. You can have helicopters with FLIR, and they can help, and they're supportive, but they can't connect that person under that deck with that crime scene. But a properly trained tracking dog can.
Yeah.
Dogs can find odors and things that have been handled by the person who laid that track. Dogs can find things in an environment that are freshly handled by somebody that hasn't been there before. And if you're going to talk about dogs as a tool of force, it's the only one that once deployed, once sent downrange, you can stop it. You can call it back. You can make it change direction. It can change direction autonomously. Nothing compares. But with all of that capability comes a lot of responsibility. And this is where the USPCA comes in with its training focus. We have to amplify the point that this is all thing that requires training. And agencies have to commit to helping their handlers to be the best they can be by providing the opportunity to train.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure with your training, you guys go over a lot of federal case law, state case law, and that kind of stuff when you're training people. That's one of the big things that I hit on. So for PATC, I teach the FTO certification, supervising and managing the FTO unit, FTO leadership, and then also I teach a response to active shooter and terrorism. Mm-hmm. So with every one of those classes, I teach about case law and where it pertains to each type of different thing that goes into. So I'm sure with the, I know there's a lot of case law, and some of the canine handlers that I worked with were very familiar and very good with all of the case law that they need to be familiar with and work with.
Constantly evolving.
I'm sure you're familiar then, Mike, too, with the changing atmosphere across the country where judges are making determinations or decisions on how dogs can operate, and they're referencing other places in the country where they did the same thing, you know, like the presenting of your hand inside the car now in certain places so the dog will go up and sniff and things like that. So you have to be on top of it. You have to be able to tell the members. And when I say members, we really are for everybody. So a lot of our stuff is free. All the training articles, the written ones are on our website. They're all free. But we realize, too, that we need to make sure that everybody else is on the same page, because what they do can come back and affect the way we do something. So, yeah.
Mike, we're preparing a testimony type of webinar coming up. We'll definitely share it with you. And if you want to share it with your listeners and your followers, you can. But, we understand that there has to be consistency, professionalism in the way that these officers are testifying too, because, one person's faulty testimony might affect significant cases in that area, if not throughout the country. So we need to make sure that we are not training the leashes, both sides of the leashes and things like that. We're also training the mind of the officer, the prosecutors, the people who are involved in case preparation, things like that, public information officers, things like that. When it comes to after the call, all right, now what do we need to do? How do we need to make sure that we are presenting this in the most accurate light? We're going to be doing that. That's kind of the feature for our next few months, is to talk about testimony, expert testimony, when you get somebody coming in as a subject matter expert, things of that nature. That's one of the steps, and it sounds like you are on that already as well.
Yes, sir. That's very cool. So with everything that you just talked about, I can't remember where I was going with that. I guess it's good that this is uncut, right?
I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Yeah. It's been a long week for me. With the testimony and speaking in court and that kind of stuff and talking about DAs or prosecutors or anything like that, do you guys have any prosecutors, DAs that you reach out to or they reach out to you to go through your training?
Don, I'll leave that for you because we have somebody perfect for that type of job to help out with our legal training. And then Steve has connections all around the world for some of the best trainers. So I'll leave it for these two guys to talk about.
Our best practices group has our attorney, who is the Los Angeles attorney. He's the USPCA attorney for many years. We have a use of force commander from LAPD who is now an attorney, and he does the DOJ consent decrees, and he is the one that writes. He's the policy guy in our group, and we have sample policies. They're on that where the training logs are, or where the training articles are on our website. We have sample policies for 2024 on there, and that's free for people to take down. These are based upon some of the things that he did. We have Steve White, who's a sergeant, retired sergeant out of Seattle. We have John Kerwick, who's a retired commander of the largest bomb dog unit in the NYPD. He's on our group. We have two people from Raleigh, the sergeant in charge of the unit and the head trainer. We've got two people from Tulsa, the supervisor of the unit plus the trainer. We have myself and these two gentlemen, and then Melinda is from Iowa. So we're pretty much reaching out, trying to get everything. Our email thing every day, we're finding something that needs to be discussed, and then we decide whether it needs to be pushed out right away or we can try to evaluate, see how many cases are coming up like that. We were behind the scenes on that AB 742 in California and giving support. We are connected to AKC. We are an affiliated club, and that gives us some legal options, not legal options, but some options in court. They have people on all the state legislatures, and that if we need to do something, need to know something, we go there. New Jersey had a problem with the attorney general. We fixed that with the help of AKC. So we are trying to be there with the information. It's not only about how does your dog operate. So and we do understand that not everybody, it's not capable for everybody to be a member of the USPCA. That's why we give the things for free. Yeah. So that people are up on everything that's going on.
Okay. Steve, do you have more?
I don't think there's much I can add to that. I think it's just, when you think about what the canine community is, I mean, compare the United States to, say, England, where in the UK you have the British Home Office, which dictates to the country how law enforcement should be done all over. They have one set of standards. That's the way it works. In this country, we're so decentralized that there are a lot of different people have found a lot of different ways to get the job done. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. Where we have a problem is we get judged by one uniform court standard. So the USPCA's role here is to try and find that common ground of best practices that's going to keep everybody in the good graces of their local courts and best serve their local communities. Because you come from an area very different. I'm in Western Washington, and you're in New Mexico. So you have a profound cultural difference. Yes. And cultural expectation of law enforcement, possibly, than we have. Some basic things people always want from their cops. But in the end, trying to find that sweet spot where we can satisfy as many people as we possibly can with the level of professionalism they expect. That's what we're about.
Okay, very cool. Now that's, I mean, going off of both of those, having prosecutors, DAs, and that kind of stuff understand what canines are responsible for, what they do, what handlers do, what, how they work with their dogs, how they recognize the different behaviors of their dogs when they have a behavioral change, when they're in odor or anything like that. I have prosecutors that are familiar with that and can, you know, kind of ask the questions the right way in court, probably will help with the testimony of getting that stuff across to the jury or judge.
And it starts with the common language, right? We have to have the words that mean the same things. An alert means one thing, a response means another, but it means the same. So in New Hampshire, when there's a handler testifying about my dog had a response to odor, that means the same thing to a handler who's testifying in California that the dog had a response to odor. Those type of things, that's how we can tighten our industry, so to speak. That's one example of how we can tighten our industry on training. It doesn't always have to be, you know, how to get a dog to recall or sit properly at an explosive, things like that. It doesn't always have to be that. Sometimes, speaking of testifying and things like that, it has to be, we first need to have a common language that we are using. And then to Steve's point, Steve came up and shared recently a questionnaire for the prosecutors to make sure they ask handlers these questions for a tracking scenario so that the prosecutor, who doesn't know much about police dog training likely, knows that there are certain sets of questions that should be asked in order to educate the judge or the jury or whoever is in that courtroom that's going to be making a decision, helping to educate the persons that are going to make decisions as to what is the capability of the dog, what was the training that brought the dog and the team to that type of a decision or that type of a call, and so on. And that's important. That's an important part, and we're focusing on that this year.
Very cool. Yeah, I think having the DAs or prosecutors have that information or even have training in those areas to ask the proper questions are going to help a lot with, as far as having the same language across the United States, help with the goal of USPCA to get things done right.
And it's not just things we did in my neck of the woods, Mike, and not to cut to you off, Steve, I'm sorry. But one thing we did in my neck of the woods, Mike, is we went to our county attorneys. We went to various attorneys' offices and asked them specifically to have an attorney who was specifically trained on canine so that they would be handling all the canine cases. They would catch them all. Mm-hmm. And that way we're not training 40 attorneys in a county attorney's office, so to speak, type of thing on canine law or on how to test, how to prepare for that canine testimony. We're training one or two attorneys, and they're going to catch all the canine cases.
Right.
Same thing on the civil side too. When, you know, because we have a tool that will occasionally be used as a tool of force, or there may be a question about violation of civil rights concerning a dog's detection work, you got to have those attorneys that are going to defend you in civil court prepared just as well. They need to understand this. And if you get around the U.S. at all, you find that we tend to speak different dialects of the same language, and we can get into knockdown, drag out scrums about the meaning of different drives and this and that. But in the end, Lou's absolutely right. We have to be able to have a coherent understanding of basic terminology that works across the board. And the other thing, I'm gonna throw this in. This is not just about the attorneys that are involved. This is about our own bosses within the department and the electeds. You know, they come into this with everything they know about canine is that, well, Lassie can tell you that little Timmy's in the well at the old Johnson place. Right. All right. And I know I just lost all the millennials and Gen Z and Gen Z's, but the reality is people have this idea of what dogs are capable of based on what they've seen on TV, and they don't fully understand that this is a completely different realm, and that we have to take our role as experts seriously, so that we can convey clearly to the people that we work with how this is done. So, for example, reading a dog's language can be broken down into 8 discrete pieces that it's pretty easy to point out to a judge or a jury or a prosecutor how you can read the dog's changes in body language if you've taken the time to actually break it down and look at it systematically. But, you know, most agencies don't do that. Everybody kind of gets it by feel. After a while, they just know when their dog is in scent and out of scent.
Yeah.
But, you know, we help bring knowledge to them that helps people systematize their work in a way that the layperson can understand it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, one of the things that you brought up, the civil side of things, we had a couple guys that they were trying to hem them up down here in New Mexico, a pretty liberal area. Or liberal state anyway, it's not the area I live in and work in, but they were trying to hem some guys up because they'd stopped a car, got a canine for free air sniff around the vehicle, exterior sniff, and the windows were down on the vehicle. They had already asked the people to step out of the vehicle. The dog jumped into the window, and they're like, oh, that's a Fourth Amendment violation. We didn't give you permission to put your dog in my car, anything like that. So they were trying to sue for that, and it didn't go anywhere, but thank God. But I can absolutely see how it could have.
Well, in other places, it would go somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's what you have to realize is that, and once it becomes the law of the land, once it's either adopted by enough different circuits or by the U.S. Supreme Court, that's what we're stuck with.
Yeah. So absolutely. And it always has somebody's name on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any conferences coming up for y'all, anything going on, big where you guys can, invite people out or any kind of sponsorship you guys have that you want to give shout outs to, anything like that, or even your own businesses if you want.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Lou's correct. We do have some things coming up. The idea that officers need to know how to testify, they need to also understand that when they're the only ones in court talking about the dogs, they are the expert. And then sometimes the expert has to teach the people in the court with testimony about how that dog performs. What are some of the things that dog can do that they might not understand, or they might think that maintenance training, as many people do, thinks is that we're just maintaining that dog at a certain level. They need to know how to explain to the court, to the jury, that that's not the case. You know, we are maintaining all of the things that they've learned, but we're increasing the difficulties to make it better and more practical. We threw something out in our forum yesterday, and it was an idea from Dave Green out in Raleigh. How they are training their handlers during deployment. So they are putting out scenario-based training, and they're calling a guy in and saying, this is the scenario. And then he goes out and does whatever he thinks is necessary. But when he comes back, the question is, some of the questions might be, why did you deploy? How did you decide to deploy? What were the reasons for deployment? You know, what are the things that you looked at before you deployed? And all of those things. So we are trying to get that. That'll be the next thing after the testimonial part of that, what Lou's doing. Just to try to get them to understand what all the different things they must look at before they actually commit the dog to some type of a deployment. After that, we did do the IACP things the last 2 years. Steve was in it on 2 years ago, and I think that was a use of force one, if I remember right. And this year we are looking at some. We're looking at whether we want to get in and do some things with the sheriffs, because it is so critical supervisory wise that the supervisor has a significant role. But we also have to realize that, and we do realize that, the supervisor in a small department may be the chief. So yeah. we have to tell people how all that works, what their jobs are. That's what Steve really did, and the rest of the group did a really good job on all in 2024 is putting that out. But we attend conferences too. So we go to HITS and we go to Hold the Line, out which is out in Myrtle Beach, and HITS is going to be in Texas this year. And we go there and we talk to handlers. We talk to people that are there, try to get new ideas. We're trying to get as many new ideas about dog training as the handlers that are still working dogs, so we can talk about those types of things.
Okay. Have you guys looked at the Western States Sheriff's Association, going to that conference in Reno?
We talked about it. Okay. We have talked about it, and one of our guys in Montana said, hey, you guys should be going to that Western States. And I looked it up, and we're trying to figure out. We can't go everywhere,
yeah.
Because our people that go out are not all retired like the three of us are, but they're still working and they're still doing things. So we need to try to plan it more efficiently so that we get to as many places as we can. So yes, we have looked at that. There's a couple of them. There's another one that's for the really big police departments. And so I don't know, I can't remember what they call it, what that name of that one is, but we're looking at going to some of those other ones also. Yes, sir.
Okay. Where's the HITS one this year? You said it's in Texas. Is it in Dallas?
Dallas.
Okay.
I'm going to throw a pitch in too, because I'm a member of two other canine organizations, the Western States Police Canine Association and the Washington State Police Canine Association, which, by the way, is the first WSPCA. WSPCA, Western States, came along later. I like to go ahead and give my buddies there in Reno and Northern California a bit of a jab. But they're both great organizations committed to increasing professionalism in the law enforcement community. And in fact, in Washington State Police Canine Association, they're the primary certifying body there, or source for authorized evaluators in Washington State. The Western States Police Canine Association runs their conferences very similar to the way Bob Eden used to run his international canine conferences. They are working conferences, and they're all about helping people learn how to make better decisions when it comes time to deploy their dogs. It's not just about dog training. And that's where the trouble comes into, is the decisions we as officers make. Yeah. There are plenty of conferences out there where you can go and get knowledge, and that's important. And I was sitting there looking, and so I'm going to bust your chops a little bit, Mike, because I'm looking at PATC's conference, at the Public Agency Training Council conference coming up.
And April,
you know,
right?
Yeah. And, you know, I think one of the things that people don't really understand right now is canine is actually on the radar for both the media and the plaintiff's bar. I mean, think about it. If you had a magic tool that could tell you that there was a, you know, forget that it's a dog. You just have a magic wand that you could hold up and it'd tell you there's a bomb in that car. There's explosives in that car. There would be attorneys who would be willing to try and take that tool out of your hands, right?
Yeah.
That's what's up with canine. Because it's a very powerful tool, there are people that want to take it out of our hands. So we have to use it responsibly, but we also have to realize that we can better prepare ourselves to answer the questions those people are going to ask, to respond to the objections that they have. And that's what this training like Don just talked about, like Lou just talked about, is all about. And I'd love to see PATC start to bring that into the highlight too. I think that there's a place for canine in your curriculum in that organization.
Absolutely.
I see a lot of great topics, a lot of very topical ones, the ones that are current. So you guys are trying to stay ahead of the curve. I'm telling you, this is an on the horizon thing that you might want to dive into.
Well, if you want, I can give you the boss's name and information, and you can reach out and you can start teaching for PATC if you want. If I had the knowledge base in canine to be able to teach a course like that or anything like that, I would put that out there to them, and they would probably be like, yeah, come on, let's do it. You know.
But here's the deal. You're a certified decoy, so you know what you don't know, and you know you got to stop that. The people who don't know what they don't know often are the ones making the decisions.
Yeah,
and absolutely. So this is a really great opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. I agree.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I've spoken with Katie Armstrong a couple of times and about different things, different trainings, that kind of stuff. She just took over the company in November, and she's like, let's do some stuff. Let's move this forward.
Huge.
Yeah. Huge. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if it's been updated since I went through it. It's been 15 years since I went through the training, but still, I mean, it's still the same basics, you know, of how to take the hit from a dog where you're not hurting the dog, you're not hurting yourself, you know, everything else. But yeah, I absolutely. I will send Dawn, I'll send you Katie's information so you can reach out to her and you guys can chat back and forth and get that going. And I would love to, you know, go to hits with you guys or be out there with you guys. One of the things that I'm going to start doing since I started taking over the podcast is going to different conferences and talking to people about PATC, not only doing that, but also getting them on the podcast and just doing some sound bites and that kind of stuff at conferences. So that'd be really cool to be out there and see you guys again. Absolutely. I was looking at the window in your background there, and it looks awfully cold. Yeah. No, I'm good. It'll melt by the time it gets here. I think when I was talking to Don the other day, you said it was pretty cold outside as well, didn't you?
Yeah, it snowed here today. It was windy, so... The snow is all over. It doesn't look like much, but I think we just got 3 inches, and we're in the 20s for temperatures.
Ooh. Steve? Yeah.
Rain mixed with snow right now in the 30s. Western Washington, we don't get as much snow as these guys do.
Yeah.
But it's wet, and it's gray, and people drink a lot of coffee trying to self-medicate.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. Yeah. Earlier, when I was outside, I was in a T-shirt. I put my hoodie on when I came inside, so that does anything. I'm 88 miles north of the border, so the United States-Mexico border, El Paso, Texas area. So,
Mike, I'd like to make an offer to you, too. If there's a specific canine topic that you need to discuss or would like to discuss, we are kind of generalizing in a sense here about some of the things we do, but we get into the nitty-gritty of a lot of things. And so if you need to, if you need to have something specific, please reach out.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. One of the things that I'm doing with the podcast is once a month, I'm going to do an additional podcast and call it Tactical Roundtable. So that's going to be for a bunch of tactical officers, TAC officers. I have 15 years of SWAT. So that's kind of my bailiwick. I also want to do one for canine because there's a lot out there for canine that needs to be talked about, needs to be said, and just bring a bunch of canine officers on and bring an expert on like one of y'all.
Hey, brother, canine operations are de facto tactical operations.
Absolutely.
Done right. They're done the way SWAT teams do it. Slow and deliberate.
Yep.
Taking every opportunity to generate compliance. Bingo.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I mean, anytime we had a dog on a track, tracking somebody who was violent, anything like that, you always had a TAC officer with, or TAC officer or two with a canine officer as cover. So, and we worked a lot with our canine officers. So we understood what the dog was going to do, where to stand, how to stand, and if the dog's on a track ready to light somebody up, we don't want to get lit up. So we're working with that, you know. But yeah, I'd love to have y'all on and maybe have, you know, some TAC canine handlers, because I know there's a lot of teams out there that have canine handlers that are on the TAC team as well, and they run their dogs in the stacks, and have you guys chatting with them on a round table. That would be a very cool thing.
Cool.
But if I have if I have any specific items, anything like that, and we get some feedback from this podcast with the canine officers that are coming on, anything like that, or they you know, I'll get comments, that kind of stuff, and I can put some stuff together and reach back out. I have all three of your emails, so I'll just send a group email, and whoever wants to jump in.
Okay. We do that a lot. People reach out quite a bit wanting to know specifics about certain things. And we're pretty open. Everything we do is open to everybody on the internet, on our webpage. So, I mean, it's just there. So, yeah, I just responded to somebody today that needed something. So that's not a problem.
Very cool. And as far as membership for USPCA K9, what does that take?
$50.
$50?
If you're talking about price. But you have to be in law enforcement.
Okay. So anybody that's in law enforcement currently, do they have to be a canine handler or no?
We don't get too many people that want to join just because they're in law enforcement. But we would take a look at it. So additionally, besides getting a quarterly it's a digital magazine now, we do a monthly newsletter that goes out. With all of them have training and things in them, so that we're trying to keep everybody on the up and up and what's going on around the world and around the United States anyway. So yeah, we're open to membership for sure.
Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, we come out as far as Las Vegas now and in the South.
Okay. And they would just go on uspcak9.com, correct?
That's correct. And it right on the front page, it says new membership. Click here.
Okay. Very cool. I'll put that link up as well on here, and I'll put it in the comments area where people can look at it and click. So it's like a hyperlink for
them.
That's
perfect. Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm going to close this out. If you guys would hang out just a minute, and as soon as I get done closing this out, then I'll stop the recording and we can talk a little bit more, and then we'll rock and roll. Okay.
Sounds good.
All right. This is Mike Heisinger with Behind the Badge, with PATC, Public Agency Training Council. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, you can always email me at behindthebadge@patc.com. With the gentleman that we're on today, uspcak9.com. If you want to reach out and have any questions you need to ask and get answered, anything like that, law enforcement officers, canine officers, supervisors, chiefs, sheriffs, DAs, district attorneys, prosecutors, anybody has questions or wants to get the training, reach out to these guys. They're the experts. They can get the answers to you. And I'm sure if they don't have the answer, they will find the answer. But more likely between these three right here, at least they have the answer. So again, Mike Heisinger with PATC Behind the Badge. Everybody stay safe, serve with compassion, and protect with a warrior spirit.